It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
On behalf of my family here and looking on, would you join me in thanking Donald Trump, Melania, and his entire family for the sacrifices that they are making to make America great again? And I thank Donald Trump for the confidence you've placed in us. And I accept your invitation to run and serve as Vice President of the United States of America.
All right, Sandy Rios with you, coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Center here in Cleveland. This is the Republican National Convention. We are actually here. We've made it safe so far, thank God. And I was praying for rain, and it did rain this morning. Now I'm praying for hail, whatever it takes to keep us, to let democracy flourish in this place. That's what I'm in favor of. Well, sitting next to me is someone that I've known for a long time, and I really love him. He's got such great personality, and he really is one of the most articulate spokespersons and principal guys. Man, I've seen Brent Bozell hang tough for so long. Brent, what's in the water at your house that you have not lost your mind? You've lived here for a long time, honestly, and I've seen you stay strong and firm on all the issues. How did you do that?
Well, you know, I guess it's like murder. if you do it once, it gets easier after that. People think I'm kidding, but I'm not when I said that we don't have an office in Washington, because Washington is an intoxicant. You are surrounded by power, and power makes you drunk. And the more power you have, the more you like it. So the more you're there, the more you start losing the sense of what brought you there, and you start losing your bearings, and it's like a magnet that pulls you to the other side. People ask all the time, why is it that so many people run and are elected as conservative and become middle of the roaders, even liberals in time? It's the intoxication factor of other people's money and other people's freedom. So I stay away from Washington. So we're across a river. That makes us in enemy occupied territory.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because I was just thinking, I used to be a singer. I didn't know you then, but I used to be a professional singer, traveled and sang, and I did a lot of work in Nashville. And when I would go to Nashville, there's a culture there that's not healthy. Mm-hmm. I thought, I don't want that. I want a normal life. So I always lived in Chicago. I go back home and, you know, clean my house and take care of my kids and have a normal life, then fly in and record. And I think it's exactly what you're talking about.
You know, the worst atmosphere of them all is Hollywood. I had an operation there a few years ago, the Paris Television Council. And every time I went out there and I spent some time there, I tell you, the women were beautiful, the cars were new, and they were all convertibles. The weather was perfect. You came to work at 10 in your short sleeves, and by noon you went to lunch. And by 3 o'clock, if you were a local, you were probably doing cocaine. Everything was just perfect. You only had to do one thing, which is sell your soul. And I would be there for two and a half days, and I would flee every time. You'd feel it. You'd feel it in the air. And I feel a different kind of poison in Washington.
Yeah, I think you're right. Enough with that explanation, but I really do think there's something to that for sure. Mm-hmm. And I should give you a better introduction. Brent Bozell is a founder and president of the Media Research Center, also Parents Television Council, and For America, which is the big grassroots organization that you guys have formed that's just flourishing.
Yeah. And 9 million, the biggest Facebook operation in the country now.
Yeah, you guys do a great job. Just telling you, sitting there close in D.C., I see you guys are doing some great work. You've got great people working for you. Yeah. All right, so Brent, why are you here? I mean, a lot of people didn't come, so why are you here?
Maybe just for the entertainment value of it. I haven't been to the last two or three conventions because they're just so dull. But this one...
It's true. I noticed when they said who wasn't coming, I thought, well, that's good. Yeah. This might actually be interesting. I did think that.
Yeah, I mean, if it were headlined by the McConnells and the Boehners of the world, like you know, we're here. No, this is going to be an interesting one. But it is consequential time for conservatives because a whole lot of stuff has been put forward in recent years in the name of conservatism. And we as conservatives have got to take a stand on acknowledging what is and denouncing what isn't.
Brent, have you officially endorsed Trump?
No, but I'm not part of the hashtag
the
Never Trump. Never been part of that. I endorse Cruz. I was very happy. I was one of the first people to endorse him. I hope he runs again. I have not endorsed Trump, but look, frankly, I'm happy to promote Mike Pence. Let's just leave it there.
So that was my next question. Are you, Mike Pence? I mean, I'd love to know your thoughts. Why are you happy to endorse Mike Pence?
I try to get Mike Pence to run in 2012. I think he is a full bore conservative. Social issues, economic issues, foreign policy issues. Yes, yes, yes. He made a mistake on a couple of things, and there are big things that he made a mistake on. No one's going to be perfect, and we cannot let the perfect be the enemy of the good when it's a real conservative. Now, that attitude is what has harmed conservatives since Ronald Reagan, where we have gone by a Republican Party line that says let the moderate is better than the alternative. And then you elect the Mitch McConnells, and then you're shocked that they behave like moderates. That's who you elected. That's not what I'm talking about. Now, Mike Pence is a conservative, and he's a darn good conservative. And people should support him. I think he brings a lot of adult supervision. However, having said that, you played the clip of the introduction. I think that's the quintessential problem with Donald Trump. That was about the worst introduction I've ever heard given. It was childish. It was amateurish. It was self-centered, and it did harm to Mike Pence simply because I'm surprised he didn't leave to go file his nails while this was going on.
Do you think some people have said that they think in part that I've heard that Trump was so deeply affected by the shootings that he just was sort of disturbed and they didn't handle it like he would have normally handled it.
I don't buy it. Look, nope. here's what I think this is going to boil down to, where this convention is concerned. It is not just the message, and the message has to be broader than Crooked Hillary. It has to be positive and forward-thinking. And he's got to put some meat on the bones of the Make America Great vision, which is a good one. But it's not just the what, it's the how that's going to be important. If he delivers an acceptance speech off the cuff and thinks that he's on The Apprentice, which is what he's been doing in the primaries, and look, it worked. I was wrong on everything. It worked for him. But it ain't going to work now. If he does it that way, it's going to be very bad for him. If, on the other hand, he listens to his speechwriters and he reads a speech and behaves presidentially, and with some humility, I think he'll steal the show.
Brent, you've been in Republican politics for a long time. I actually am kind of an outsider. I'm a member of the party, but I'm not a Republican Party activist, and so I know a lot about it, but I'm not involved. Were you involved in the platform and the rules and all of that?
Not only was I not, I'm not a Republican. I will say, however, that I have probably done more for Republicans and 99% of Republicans out there. If it's a conservative Republican, I'll support him. But no, I'm an independent.
Are you watching all these congressional? There's only a few congressional races out there, but there's some pretty significant ones hanging in the balance, like Paul Ryan's challenger in Wisconsin, Paul Nellen. Any comments about that? Or you want to plead the fifth?
Well, look. David Bratt was an unknown without any money, without any support. And any conservative organization that says, well, you know, we were behind him. No, nobody was. He was a complete unknown. Jenny Beth Martin from the Tea Party Patriots and I were in his district at the start of the campaign on the defund battle because he completely sold out conservatives on that. I get a sense that this could happen again. Look, Donald Trump, Lance DeBoyle, people are sick and tired of. Think about this, Sandy. This statistic, I tell everybody, puts everything in perspective. In 2014, the number two issue was immigration and the executive amnesty issue. The Republicans ran 10,000 commercials nationwide, pledging to end the executive amnesty. In the month of October alone, 3 weeks after the election, they funded it for another year. The number one issue...
Could I just interject? Unless you doubt it, Brent is absolutely correct on this. Absolutely correct. It's amazing.
The number one issue in the campaign cycle was Obamacare. And by the way, you can thank Mike Lee and Ted Cruz because of the fight that they put up for. If they not put up that fight, the Republicans would have completely surrendered on it.
That's right.
So, in the month of October alone, Republicans ran 35,000 television commercials pledging to repeal and defund Obamacare. 3 weeks later, Mitch McConnell and John Boehner funded it for another year. This is cynicism. People say, well, how could they do something like that? Answer, they want to do that. Do you know how you get rid of Obamacare? They could have gotten rid of it. All they had to do was to say in January, in appropriations, we're not appropriating money for it.
Well, they did the same thing with Planned Parenthood. Should we go on? It's amazing. We got to defund it. But then they fully fund it. They give it more money than it had
before.
But
then, you know, whether it's a Mitch McConnell or it's a John McCain or it's an Orrin Hatch and they're running for re-election, my God, are they Reaganites? And they all give that speech about how, if elected, I'm going to get rid of Planned Parenthood, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think what's happening out there is the grassroots fed up. Fed up with it. It's not distortions. These are lies. And they've been going on for years.
You know, back to Wisconsin, Paul Nehlen is hitting Paul Ryan. I mean, he did a press conference out front of Paul Ryan's house to show all the security, the fence, and he's saying the border, you know, you don't want a border fence, you want open borders, then take down your fence. I mean, he did a really powerful press conference.
Eerily reminiscent of David Bratt in Eric Hanner's district.
Yeah.
And people just stood up and took notice. Look, the base is still very conservative, and the base is fed up, and they're asking themselves, what in the world, why won't these guys do it? And so when you have candidates who stand up and give the ABCs of what's happening in Washington, D.C., and look like they're presentable, well, guess what? They're winning race after race around the country. So Paul Ryan is Speaker, the number one most powerful Republican in Washington. Even he's being threatened now.
Yeah, so because he's talking about open borders. He's going around the country with Luis Gutierrez, about more immigration.
Yeah, Paul
Ryan's criticizing Trump on cutting down on Muslim immigration from terrorist countries.
Paul Ryan's a nice guy, but a fiscal conservative, a guy who puts forward a budget that's going to be balanced in 18 years, is not a fiscal conservative.
All right, one last question. I'm curious, Brent, we're watching the polls, you and I both. I know we know Trump is moving up, and then certainly in some swing states he's moving up. The effect of all of this violence, Nice, France, Baton Rouge, Dallas, and every few days, do you think that this is going to have a great effect on this campaign and maybe beneficial to Donald Trump?
To the degree that he handles it presidentially, absolutely. It could be, we always say that the economy is the number one issue. National security and just security within our nation, for the first time, could become a number one issue. And Donald Trump does project law and order. He does project leadership on the international stage. He's got to be careful how he does it. That's why he needs people writing speeches, and he needs to be presidential.
All right, Brent Bozell. Thank you, Brent. Media Research Center, the bellwether, the gold standard, really, for watching the media. It's a wonderful thing to see, Brent, how you have spent your life in public service.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hello, I'm Ron Paul. My son, Dr. Rand Paul, needs reinforcement in the U.S. Senate. That's why I have endorsed Dr. Kelly Ward in her U.S. Senate race in Arizona against John McCain. Her dedication to reducing the size of government and defending the Bill of Rights is beyond question. As a state senator, Dr. Ward fought against the federal government's indefinite detention of American citizens and the mass surveillance of personal cell phone records without a warrant. Please go to kellyward.com today to make a donation and help Kelly carry the torch of liberty to our nation's capital.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. I just think that's a really interesting commercial because Dr. Ron Paul is endorsing Dr. Kelly Ward. Kelly Ward is running against John McCain, who's been in the Senate, I don't know, since he was a pup, like right out of Vietnam. And so he's been there a very long time. And there are a lot of people in Arizona who are excited about the candidacy of Dr. Kelly Ward. We've talked to her on air before, but here she is right here at the Republican convention. So I wanted to talk to her face to face. Kelly, thanks for joining me.
Oh, Sandy, thanks for having me.
What kind of doctor are you? I can't remember.
Yes, I'm a family physician. So I'm a generalist who knows at least a little bit about a lot of things, but knows that I need a specialist. And I think that's helped me in legislating as well.
do you practice now?
I do. I had a private practice for about 10 years, and as I transitioned into the political realm, I started to work in the emergency department, experiencing the safety net of our healthcare system. My husband is an emergency physician, so we get to work side by side. It's kind of like a date when we go to work, but it keeps my medical mind sharp. You know,
that's some date. I'm thinking, oh, that's some date. Yeah. Yeah, because he's a military surgeon, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he's a flight surgeon. He's in the Air National Guard, so that's his part-time job. And then his full-time job is being an emergency medicine physician.
Whatever gave you the idea to run for Senate?
You know, I never thought I'd run for office at all. But whenever Obamacare reared its ugly head, I thought we didn't have enough experts from the trenches, people who were actually taking care of patients who were weighing in on that. So I ran for the state Senate. Everyone told me I was going to lose. I will tell you that. And I was able to be victorious because I do have a skill set I think that is very valuable in the political arena. And so I was so successful in the Arizona State Senate that people started to ask me, hey, you know, John McCain's been in Washington for nearly 40 years. He doesn't look like he's going to step down on his own. Would you consider running? And it took a lot of thought and learning and listening and praying for me to decide that, yes, there was a political pathway and a financial pathway to be able to be successful, and then here I am today running against John McCain.
There are a lot of, we know a lot about John McCain, most people. It's funny, Kelly, when any national security issue comes up, he's like the person. You know, Fox always goes to John McCain. Well, I have my own feelings about that, mostly negative. I have not been a fan for a very long time, and but I want to know about the people of Arizona. They keep sending him back. So why is that? First of all, why is that?
Well, you know, it's very easy. It's much, much easier for incumbents to come back to Washington, D.C., to come back to any political office because they've got a machine behind them that exists, a financial machine especially. And with Senator McCain, you know, he's got name recognition. His name recognition is nearly 100%, but I think he's got some of the same problems that Hillary Clinton has in that the job satisfaction is very, very low. And so that's why people are looking to change Washington, and they know we can't change Washington unless we change the people we send there. So they're looking for a competent, qualified, capable person who can take the reins and hit the ground running. And luckily for me, they see that in me. And I think that we are going to be victorious in August, even though it's a David and Goliath battle. David won, and we can too.
You know, one of the many things that Senator McCain did that really, really, let's say, got my goat. I'll just say that, got my goat. After he ran for president, he had a huge war chest, you know, a lot of money.
Yes.
So he wrote a very long article laying out in detail how he was going to change the Republican Party, and he was going to make it more, he was going to broaden the tent, and he was going to make it, I don't know, in his image. So one of the first candidates that he took his campaign war chest money and picked and supported was Mark Kirk in Illinois, and that's my home, that was my home state. Mark Kirk is a disaster. He has probably done a few things right, a few, mostly things terrible. And he had the full support of John McCain. He had the financial backing, and that's why he won in Illinois. And he did that all over the country. So that's one thing I know. What do people tell us in particular, Kelly? What do you think the egregious things people need to know about what John McCain has done?
Yeah, you know, he used that money and that power for a lot of things, and you're exactly right, to get more Republican in name only type Republicans into the federal government, into local government. And he also used some of that power, some of that influence, and some of that money to try to purge the Republican Party in Arizona of actual conservatives.
Yes, he did.
He used it to try to unseat some of our county and legislative district chair people. He believes that this party should be made in his image. That's why he calls Tea Party people hobbits. That's why he calls people
wacko
who want
birds.
To stop Obamacare wacko birds. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Why he called people who want to secure our border, who supported Trump, you know, early on, crazies. He's very caustic towards conservatives. I can tell you, he's attacking me relentlessly. I went back and looked to see how he attacked Barack Obama in his bid for president. There were no attacks.
Oh, he didn't.
No,
he didn't. And in fact, he told, he made Sarah Palin be quiet. You know,
yes.
They tapped her down so much, and they couldn't talk about Jeremiah Wright. They weren't allowed to discuss that. It really was an amazing story. Kelly, but I think one of the most egregious things is he always talks about securing the borders. And when it's time for him to run, I know this before I ever knew you, before you ever ran, he would always move to the right. He'd
yes.
say, "Oh, we're going to build a border. We're going to strengthen our, you know, defense against the." And Arizona's got one of the most porous borders in the nation. Serious problems. And then he got elected, and then he just. What did he do, Kelly?
I just was down at the border on Friday and Saturday this last week, meeting with those ranchers, meeting with those families who have been affected by people coming into our country, breaking into our country, invading our country illegally, and causing havoc down there at the border. And John McCain, the last time he ran, said, "Build the dang fence." And then as soon as he went to Washington, D.C., he headed up. I don't say he just joined. He headed up the Gang of Eight amnesty bill. Now, he wants to resurrect that in 2017. It's been already being tossed around. So we cannot have John McCain in Washington, D.C. tossing around amnesty yet again, because we all know that border security is national security. And we do want to make America safe again, just like was the theme of the convention yesterday. We want America to be safe. And the way that we're safe is to secure that border and secure that border first before we talk about cleaning up the mess that illegal immigration has become.
All right, so he has all this name recognition and he keeps getting reelected in Arizona. What do the polls tell you now, Kelly?
Yes, the latest public poll that was done not by a campaign shows that we're neck and neck, 41-41. We are coming down to the wire, and that this race really is a toss-up in the primary. Now, John McCain wants to treat it as though, you know, it's just a throwaway. He's already running against the Democrat. But I know that he is seriously worried about the primary. His super PAC, it's called Arizona Grassroots Action PAC. It has nothing to do really with Arizona or grassroots. It's all designed to attack people who dare to stand up to Senator McCain. And that PAC did a poll using the same company, I believe, that polled for Eric Cantor. We saw how that turned out.
Yeah, we did.
And it shows that we're a little farther apart. But I think that that's to generate money for that super PAC, not to really say what's going to happen as the outcome of the election.
Is there still another candidate in the primary?
There is. There's actually two. One polls at 2%. The one that polls at 2%, it's kind of funny because he's running against Trent Franks in the House race and running against all of us in the Senate race.
You can do that at the same time?
Well, the law is not clear in Arizona. It says that you cannot run for two state offices, but it doesn't say anything about federal office. I think the intent is clear, but we didn't want to waste our money going to court against a guy who gets 2%. The other guy gets about 4%, and he's told people that he's in the race just because he simply doesn't like me.
Well, that's rousing.
But I think he might like Senator McCain, right. So who knows?
Kelly, let's talk about what your passion is, because you are a doctor and your husband's military, and you talked about the border already, but as you muse about what you would want to do, what would really be the thing that would you really want to go after and put your energies at? What would that be?
Yes. Well, of course, we have to secure the border. We've talked about it. We need to repeal Obamacare. We need to fix the economy. But something that's near and dear to my heart is making sure that we honor our promises to our veterans and make sure that we take care of them once their service ends. And we are falling down on the job. And that's on the watch of the most well-known veteran in this country. Phoenix VA is ground zero for the terribleness.
How can that be? How can that be? When Senator McCain makes his bones talking about how he was injured in Vietnam and how important veterans, and then how can that happen
yes.
in his state?
right?
Well, he has enriched himself considerably. He's a very wealthy man.
Yes.
How does that happen? How do people let that happen? I don't get that, Kelly.
Well, he uses our military, men and women, and our veterans as political pawns in his game. And it's not a winning game for the veterans. It's not a winning game for our military personnel. It's a winning game for him as a politician. We've got to stop playing the game. We've got to stop writing letters, you know, holding meetings, grandstanding, and then not getting anything done. People are dying, waiting in line. Over 300,000 veterans have died. 22 veterans suicides per day. It's unacceptable. So we've got to stop talking, start acting.
Did you see Lucas? Is it Lucas Cottrell speak last night?
Marcus
yes. Cottrell speak last night.
Yes.
The most moving thing about taking care of veterans, as a, you know, the star of Lone Survivor of his own book. It's just pleading, really. We have to take care of them.
Yes.
This is just very, you know, it's funny, John McCain's not here, is he?
No. He's decided he's going to stay home and tour the Grand Canyon, but I hope he'll have a lot of time to do that after August 30th.
Is that when the primary is?
Yes.
August 30th?
August 30th.
All right, so, Kelly, you came because there was some sort of a unity rally yesterday. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was invited to come and speak at a unity rally, which was great because it brought together people of all parts of the party, you know, a very conservative Tea Party. Diamond and Silk were there. I don't know if you've ever seen them
on
YouTube.
Oh, yes, black women.
Yeah,
they're so cute.
They are amazing. So
they love Trump, yeah.
They love Trump. They're stumping for Trump. And, there was some Milo from Breitbart was a speaker. I got to speak. Mike Michaels from the Tea Party. There were a lot of great speakers. And so we came because I think it is important to unify our party. I think it is important for us to bring together the conservatives, the liberty-loving people, the people who have never voted before, who need to be nurtured by the Republican Party rather than belittled by the Republican Party. And so we went, and you know, it was great. The crowd was great. There were some protesters. I believe they had to take the city of Cleveland to court to be able to get their permit to have the rally. So it was kind of a short notice for me to be able to come. But that wasn't too scary. They had the police presence is amazing here. I don't know if you've noticed.
Oh yes, we have noticed.
They're not inciting anything. They're just there. They're so respectful. So and make you feel very safe walking along the street. So they were there keeping. There were some pretty radical protesters up there.
We saw yesterday also, we saw just some, they just look like trouble.
Yes.
And they were chanting these obscene, I can't repeat them, obscene
yes.
chants. So they're here.
Yes.
And, you know, but the police presence is amazingly strong. I was concerned about that, actually, because we had heard before we came that a lot of units around Ohio, around Cleveland were refusing to come. So on the streets yesterday, I don't know if you guys saw, but there are units of police from all over the country.
Yes, I did.
Wisconsin, Utah, and you know, and they didn't have to come.
Yes. Yes. I saw some from Indiana. I saw some from all around. Yeah, and they're what I saw was so many people going up, shaking their hands and saying thank you.
Yeah. Well, yes, it might have been my husband and I, because I just can't help it. I can't help it. I mean, they came here. They came at the danger.
Yes.
They volunteered. They came here. And thank God for them. Yes. And as I said, this is not about being a Republican. It's about the democratic process.
Yes.
And that's why I'm repeating myself for my listeners. But my husband and I, you know, we were measured in our, we never wavered about coming. But certainly we understood that this is a dangerous place. But if we don't come, they've had victory.
Yes.
I would say the one thing that I'm delighted about is that so many of the Republican establishment didn't come because, you know, it might be a dangerous place, like Senator McCain. I'm glad they didn't come. I'm so grateful. Were you guys there last night, or did you see any of what happened on the platform last night?
Whenever the delegates were...
No, I'm speaking about speeches last night.
Oh, the speeches last night, yes. It was amazing because you had military, you had police, you had people who were all coming together because we do want to make America safe again. We don't want to do it at the expense of liberty. Of course not. We don't want to take away people's liberty. We want to uphold the Constitution. But we do want this great nation to be safe. Look at other countries around the world. Look at the coup in Turkey. I mean, that's a military coup where someone comes in and is, you know, there is bloodshed and there's death in the rather than a political process to change leadership. I think we are going to see a huge leadership change. We are not going to have Hillary Clinton as a president. We are going to have Donald Trump as a president. And we're going to be able to have conservative reinforcements in the House and the Senate to make sure that those conservative ideals that our country was founded upon are going to blossom once again and make this country great.
Kelly, did you endorse Donald Trump? Have you?
I have now. I mean, you know, he wasn't my guy at the beginning. I really love Ted Cruz. I think he's somebody that I want to emulate in the United States Senate. He's somebody that I want to be under his wing and have his mentorship there, because I think he's got amazing ideas and he has done exactly what his constituents expected him to do, to stand up, to have a backbone, to represent the Constitution, to stay conservative in Washington, D.C., where it's very, very difficult. I think a lot of people come into Washington and get under the wrong wing, and then that's when we end up with this, the same thing that John McCain has tried to do using his money, he does using his mentorship as well, and we get this almost thuggery in our political process, and it's not supposed to be thuggery. People ask me all the time, aren't you afraid of Senator McCain? No, I'm not afraid of Senator McCain. And in America, if any of us are ever fearful of our elected leaders, then we are in a very, very bad spot.
Well, and that's kind of the same theme of why we're here. Mm-hmm. In the face of whatever happens here, we're here. And there are tons of people just determined to preserve our freedoms. So, Kelly, thank you. Dr. Kelly Ward, she's challenging John McCain. The primary is August the 30th in Arizona. So, Dr. Kelly Ward, thank you. We'll talk to you very soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
8:40 a.m., a quiet Sunday morning in Baton Rouge, when officers spot a man dressed in black, holding a rifle near a convenience store. .842, reports received of shots fired.
We have an officer down behind. We need the Bearcat down for an evac.
Responding officers locked in a gun battle.
All I saw when we pulled up and took a round through the windshield, he had a mask on.
.848, with medics on the scene, trying to get to the fallen officers.
Officers engaged the subject at that particular time, and he ultimately died at the scene.
The ambush-style attack leaves three officers dead, three others wounded. The shooter, later identified as 29-year-old Gavin Long. The crime scene remained active for several hours after the shooting. Police uncertain whether more shooters might be on the run. Many in the immediate area sheltering behind closed doors.
We're on lockdown at the moment. Everyone is in effect. We cannot leave. And even if we could leave, the police are blocking down the street. So everyone has to stay where we are.
Baton Rouge is already a city on edge. The shooting comes less than 2 weeks after a black man was shot dead by a white police officer. After consoling the families of the victims, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards addresses what he called the unspeakable tragedy.
It's unjustified. It's unjustifiable. The violence, the hatred just has to stop.
Sandy Rios with you here live at the Quicken Loan Center in Cleveland, Ohio. That's a sobering report. And so all of us, all Americans that watch that, it's a black policeman killed, a white policeman, two white policemen. It's not, as I've said many, many times before, this isn't about race. This is about evil. Mm-hmm. And there's evil in the hearts of all men. And so I asked Lonnie Poindexter to join me. Lonnie's the host of Lion Chasers on Urban Family Talk Radio.
Urban Family Talk Radio.
For AFR Talk. And so, yes. Lonnie, first of all, and also Lonnie's a pastor. He's the director of the Urban Family Pastors Network. Before I even ask you a question, I want to apologize. Because I think one of the things that that I dislike, I'm not crazy about, is that every time I should have a conversation with a black man, it's about issues of the black community. I thought we were past that, and I think we were. Now, here we are, back to Groundhog Day, where we have to talk about race all the time. I mean, that in itself is distressing to me. So we have been forced down in the mud to revisit. It's kind of like when a mate has had an adulterous affair 20 years ago, and mm-hmm. it keeps, the scab keeps getting. It's like it's a deep hurt, And it can't be, there's nothing that we could do to fix the pain, but we can't live this way. So, okay, I'll be quiet. And I want to know how you think, the black community is not monolithic, but what do you think the response of the black community, broadly speaking, will be to these police shootings?
Well, Sandy, first of all, there's no need for you to apologize, because the reality is this is brought to the forefront because we have great divisiveness taking place in our nation's from our nation's capital going forward out to the community, starting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And that's what's, in my humble opinion, what's driving it. As far as it relates to the black community is not monolithic. And those who have our particular shared worldview, and you and I are brethren because of our common values, has nothing to do with our paint job.
That's right.
And yet, this divisiveness is driven to take, I think, people's eyes off the real issues in our nations, our economy, point blank, what's happening in the black community, as nothing has been done from a positive standpoint for almost 8 years in the black community, given that we've had a quote-unquote black president elected. And let me just add, he was elected twice. So there's racial divisiveness, and we have a black elected president twice. Black community's 13% of the population, give or take. A whole lot of white folks voted for Barack Obama. So where's this divisiveness? Where's this racism? You know, now I get beat up a lot because of taking this stance. But I think what's happening is the passionately misinformed, which is I call that constituency out there that seems to roll with this false narrative, causes the perfect storm that would set up something for some crazy individual like this man that killed these three police officers. And isn't it ironic? Two of them were white, one was black.
Exactly. And this is not unusual. I mean, it's like this is the point that has to be made. This is the spirit of rebellion. I keep saying that. It mm-hmm. is the spirit of rebellion. And it is a spirit of, it's a spirit that wants to destroy this country. And that means black Americans and white Americans. It wants to destroy the social order.
Yes.
It wants to destroy the family. And so we are all in this together, those of us that love this country, those of us especially that are followers of Christ. This is a battle that we have to face together. And our enemy, I mean, there's, you know, when you see the protesters that were planning to come, Lonnie, mm-hmm. You know, they talk about Black Lives Matter. It's certainly them, but it's also, it's the Bill Ayers, it's the Saul Alinsky groups. It's, you know, even in the civil rights era back in the 60s, it was the white leftists who were stirring the pot, even among the black.
Yes.
You know, people who wanted to be free and were rightfully protesting were being used by this. They're the planners, you know. They plan everything for us.
That is so true.
Yeah.
The black community is used as the pawn to drive the pawns to drive the socialist agenda. Mm-hmm. And as an American who happens to be black, I'm sick and tired of seeing the manipulation take place. If you want to do something positive for our community, we need to speak truth about what's really going on.
So. Now, back to my first question. Let me ask it better.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly for people that, look, there's a lot of hurt. And there's some of it, though, for this generation, you wonder why, you know, there's so much opportunity for black families and black men. And, you know, I certainly there's still racism. Of course, there's racism from blacks to whites. And there's evil. But there's great opportunity. And so I don't know if there's, like, a lot of people experiencing, you know, the terrible things their parents experience. I don't. Is that still happening somewhere that I'm not seeing, Lonnie?
No, it's not happening at all. Just like I stated before, prior, twice a black president was elected by the majority population.
Yeah.
So it speaks to what's taken place. This is not 1965. It's not even 1975. We're in 2016, this unprecedented opportunity for black Americans, all Americans, to succeed. Well, the economy probably
yeah.
makes it a little bit
yeah.
different.
If only, yeah.
Yeah, but it's... Yeah. It's a false narrative to keep the eye off of what's really going on, which is the implosion of our values to redefine America into something it was never intended to be.
Okay, so back to the black community. So you've got, yeah, I know you've got, like the Black Lives Matter groups and mm-hmm. the New Black Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
I can only
socialist.
Imagine. That, yeah, socialists. they're a very small percentage of the black community. But they, so we know how they're going to respond. But how about just black folk who are out there listening and they're watching police getting killed?
Mm-hmm.
And they can't. I just don't believe they could be down with that, Ron.
They're not down with it. There's a lot of aha moments taking place, in my opinion, Sandy, where folks, the reality is a lot of folks aren't informed on what's really going on. That's why we have our shows collectively to get the truth out to the populace, because we know the mainstream media drives a particular agenda that supports this false narrative. Mm-hmm. So they're going, something's not right, because I'm getting a lot of one-on-one conversations. Maybe not in public,
right?
Maybe not in social media, but privately, things don't add up. And, you know, I think that's what's driving this trend in the black community for support of Donald Trump.
Now, that's interesting. So, speaking of that, what do you think? I mean, do you think that the black community, okay, see, here we go again, making them one, I know, let's just say not Black Lives Matter, not New Black Panthers, the black church-going folk, middle class in this country, do you think they're going to support Donald Trump?
A lot of them are looking at Donald Trump. I work with clergy across the country, and many of them are talking to me about how Trump resonates with them. Now, it gives them a pass. You have a lot of black folks that say, I'm not going to become a Republican, but I can justify supporting Trump because he's not a true Republican, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, I do.
It means they're along the path of learning, and as they get more and more educated about the truth, like I shared with a pastor recently, he was talking about his support for Black Lives Matter, until I sent him information showing the connection to socialists, George Soros and all that. And his response was, oh, I didn't know.
You'll like this story. I guess I've told it three times on the air now, so here I go. This just still bothers me. Makes me angry every time I think about it. I got in a cab in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and the driver was a Nigerian woman who dressed very nicely, and she had a cross hanging. And I said, hey, I like your cross. So we start talking, and then she tells me that she's part of Black Lives Matter and that all white policemen want to kill black people.
Mm-hmm.
She's saying she's only been here that I don't know how long she's not. I said, are you kidding me? I said, it's not. Oh, yes, it is. They want to kill us. And I said, oh, my goodness. And then she tells me, me and my whole family are registered to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So she's Nigerian, just off the boat. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even have a clue. But she's been told that white policemen want to kill blacks. And now she's part of Black Lives Matter. And now she's going to vote. That bothers me, Lonnie, not because she's black, because this is happening to people from who get off the boat of all colors. It's really, is the whole issue of illegal immigration troubling to the black community?
Extremely troubling. I'm from Southern California, and Southern Californians who happen to be black know up close and personal what illegal immigration has done to Southern California. There's competition for jobs, competition for housing. In fact, it got so bad that a major hospital, a trauma center in southwest Los Angeles, by the Martin Luther King Medical Center, was shut down because it ran out of funding because of being completely overrun by illegal aliens coming in and using the trauma center as first level health care. It's just ridiculous. And so they know. I have a friend of mine who's a nurse, and she said to me, and she's a trauma nurse, and been in nursing many, many years, you know, and she says that I call her Archie Bunker because she gets real definitive about her views on illegal immigration. So what are you saying? She says, Lonnie, it's not just education, it's not just healthcare in the truest sense, it's jobs. She says, why should I have to be bilingual to apply for a job because people who come here who don't speak the language and are not here legally? She said, they will hire someone over me. I've got 20 years experience, and they'll hire somebody with 10 years experience because they're bilingual. That hit me.
Yes. And not only that, but you think of all the, like, teenagers and their entry-level jobs are being taken by illegal immigrants. I don't know if they're all illegal, but I know probably many of them are. And so the unemployment rate among young black men is just, it's unbelievable. Isn't it like 80% or 70? It's really high.
Oh, in Chicago, I think it's almost 90%. Between 18 and 24, something like that.
Yeah.
You've got a guy behind the counter serving hamburgers. He's 45 years old because he's bilingual and he's fresh off the boat. I don't know how to put it.
Yeah. Well, I don't either. So, I mean, but that's really what's happening, and it's really adversely affecting the black community and all of us. You know, and we are all Americans. We are in this together, and especially, again, as I said, Christians. And Lonnie, that brings me back. You know, it's not easy to bridge the racial. I don't think it's so hard. I mean, I thought we'd bridged it. I'm really upset, to be honest with you. I'm really upset with this president for taking us back in time and causing trouble, and again, stoking those fires. But we have to go back and revisit it now. So it has to happen in the church, doesn't it? Like, I think of that church in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
where they had that incredible worship service after the killings by the white racist kid.
Right.
That is our example, isn't it?
It is, because forgiveness is the key. The wounds had been healed, but they've been, I don't know if the term is correct, re-injured or something based upon this false narrative. Our president, you have to understand, when I understand his background and so forth, he's obviously a proponent of liberation theology. He attended a church in Chicago. Jeremiah Wright was a liberation theology pastor, which is basically all our problems in our community are white folks caused it. And it's so far from the truth. If you know our true history as Americans, and then in particular as black Americans, it's heavily steeped in what a whole lot of folks who didn't look like me did for folks who look like me so that I could sit across from you here in Cleveland and talk on a radio show. Again, it's not 1965, certainly not 1975, but to keep the narrative going, to keep the eyeballs off the real issues in our nation, this is what they're doing.
You know, the protesters are saying now, love conquers all, but we know that God's love conquers all. It's not love for some other person. It's not sexual love. It's only God's love.
Yes.
But even that's being distorted. But we're here to set that record straight, aren't we, Lonnie?
Yes, we are. We're going to speak the truth and the whole truth.
You,
so help us, God.
You betcha. And finish well, right? Lonnie Poindexter, again, it's Urban Family Talk. You can hear him every day.
Brock. From 11 till 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Host of the Lion Chases.
Yeah.
Okay, I love that. Lonnie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
God bless you, brother.
God bless you.
We'll see you soon. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.